Hey, everybody. Welcome to the new printing press, where we are talking about all things church, ministry, technology, discipleship. And if you are listening now, this is episode 2. And the New Printing Press is a newsletter, podcast, community where we just want to talk to pastors, innovators, people who are building church tech, serving the church through technology, and just kind of help both theologically, philosophically, and then practically kind of wade through these waters. And so my guest today is none other than the bishop himself, Dean Sweetman. Dean is the founder and CEO of Tithely. He's also my co-host on another podcast I do. He also has been my pastor friend for a very, very long time, which we can get into in a second. But I just want to welcome Dean Sweetman to the podcast. Dean, how are you?
Mate, good. That's a big intro. I feel like a lot of pressure descending on me now.
So you and I have had, I want to get into, you know, your sort of background, Tithely, how you started it. But you and I have known each other. I was actually thinking about this morning, almost 15 years.
Wow.
Which is wild to think about. So you and I met, you were pastoring in Atlanta and Los Angeles. I was a young 22-year-old punk kid who was running away from the church as fast as he could. And through a friend of a friend of a friend, I somehow came across you. And I will never forget the first time we met in North Hollywood on I forget what street that was. What was the street the church was on?
Magnolia, was it?
Magnolia. Oh,
yeah.
Yep. At the Eclectic Cafe.
Yeah.
And I was so over church, man. And me and my friend had a long lunch with you and just left going, man, this guy is amazing. And so you really, really were instrumental in me coming back to not just church, but into ministry. And that's a whole crazy story in and of itself. Yeah. I was, we showed up to that lunch with such skepticism.
With Chris, right?
With Chris, yeah, because, you know, we were a part of this like mega church in Texas that kind of blew up, and we were way too young and way too close to everything. And so we were very much at an arm's length. And dude, we met with you, and the next week we were there like setting up chairs and just like doing all it. You tricked me into becoming like leading the youth ministry at one point. So it was awesome. But I remember you would fly into LA, and I lived closest to LAX. And so on Sundays, oftentimes I'd pick you up and we'd, you know, sit in traffic getting back to, and at the time I was like working at my first startup, you know, like in doing the entrepreneurship thing, falling in love with that. And so we've been talking about ministry and business for a really long time. Yeah. And okay. So then I remember you starting Tithely. I remember sitting at Dinosaur Coffee with you in Silver Lake, and you were like, we were talking about beacons. Like, could you put a beacon in a church lobby? Do you remember that conversation? And like very early on.
Yeah.
And then it was just like, the rest is history. So maybe just share quickly, like, you know, you're not just a CEO and a founder. You've spent literally decades building church, pastoring people, pastoring pastors. Talk about like that and how that informed you starting Tithely and kind of the story behind that.
Man, beacons, that technology didn't take off, did it? I think
it did not.
Beacons and QR codes came about the same time. And I think we probably would have put our money on beacons, but QR code won. So, yeah, man. Oh, look, I've lived a very, you know, I've been so blessed on so many levels. Been in the right place at the right time, you know, a lot of times throughout my life. Made plenty of mistakes, like everyone. Some small mistakes that cost you, you know, big, and some big mistakes that you dodge a bullet and, you know, they end up working out for good. The first 10 years was evangelism, man, raging around Africa and Asia, preaching the gospel, T.L. Osborne and Reinhard Bonnke. And they were kind of my heroes, you know, and just learned a lot about faith and, you know, raising money, trying to get partners, which back then in Australia was not even heard of. I think I was the only full-time evangelist in the whole country at one point.
Wow.
This is in the late 80s, early 90s. So,
do I remember hearing a story that there was a period of time where your family was literally living in a bus?
Correct.
Okay. Is that a real thing, right?
That's part of the folklore. Yeah. I think Jake used to like open the window and like pee out the back window in the middle of the night. So it was crazy, some crazy years. And then fast forward, we end up moving to the US and planted a church in Atlanta and end up overseeing 50, 60 churches here in the US and Canada and South America. And, you know, all the way along, I was pretty tech, you know, kind of forward, always thinking about how technology could benefit, you know, the mission. And then a few things happened. So online giving. So I remember like in like 98, getting a website for the church, and some dude I found on the internet built this website, and I don't think he was a Christian, but he felt sorry for me, so he did it for like 50 bucks. And there was this gift with a, I wanted the Holy Spirit and like hovering over the earth. And he did it. And I said, can you make the globe spin? He said, globes will be spinning. So, and then the next thing I tried to do is get giving on the website, which back then was like almost impossible, let alone recurring giving. So, you know, I was just kind of early. And then, so the internet obviously was the biggest thing to happen in the last kind of technologically to the planet, you know, in the last 30 years. And then mobile was the next kind of thing. Of course, now it's AI, which we'll get to. But, you know, mobile really changed the playing field a lot. When you could go and take, you know, you go back in the 60s to these giant IBM mainframe computers, and now you have, like, more compute than that in your pocket. And so, and then the App Store, right? And then it was just, and I've told this story many times, I used the Starbucks app to buy a coffee in 2012. And, you know, put my credit card in at the time and the ticket came out and it was just super easy. I'm like, man, church giving should be that easy. And that was kind of the first seed of thinking about a mobile first kind of giving solution for church. So Barn, my older son, went away and built it, came back in 12 months and stood up in front of my own church and, you know, tens of thousands of dollars started coming in. And that was largely a hobby. Didn't really know what I was supposed to do with the business. Had some pretty like life altering personal things happen when I turned 50, moved out to LA full time and thought, man, I got to get serious about what I'm going to do next and started the business. So, you know, it's been an amazing 8 years, you know, when you think about nearly 40,000.
It's crazy to think it's only been 8 years. That feels like a long time, but at the same time, it doesn't, you know, feel like a long time.
You know, and mm-hmm. like, you know, I read some of these startups, they grind for 20 years trying to, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. get to wherever they want to go to. I was very ambitious, always have been, always wanted to grow, always wanted to be the best, the biggest. And so just driven, you know, to drive and grow the business. We're very fortunate on some timing things, but yeah, no, here we are, you know, do a couple $1 billion in giving this year and 170, you know, hopefully happy employees and more to go do. So that's the short version of how I got here.
Yeah. So, okay, earliest days of Tithely, mm-hmm. you know, you're starting to get out and sell and get it in front of pastors. One thing that we've really noticed since launching Pulpit AI, even announcing Pulpit AI, is there's this, I don't even want to say trope, but there's this thing that anyone in the church says, and that is that the church is always like 18 to 24 months behind technologically. And maybe it's probably even further than that, right?
Yeah.
So I guess two questions. Number one, why do you think that is? And number two, talk about some of maybe the early pushback that you came across obstacles you had to overcome in those super early days to what is now like, I don't know the stat, you'd probably know it better than me, but so in 8 years, I mean, I would say the vast majority of churches and their giving is digital, right? I'll give you
some stats on the US. $135 billion a year is given to churches and ministries in the US. You cut out certain chunks of it, synagogues, you know, mm-hmm. the Mormon church kind of do it a bit differently. So think about, and the Catholics kind of do it a bit differently. So think about 90 billion evangelical Protestant, you know, giving. And we estimate there's still 50 billion in cash and check.
Wow.
So it's grown a lot, but
it still has a lot of room to grow.
Yeah. So you've got churches like yours, you know, like skewing younger, you're going to be 90% plus, right? Digital. Mm-hmm. You've got beautiful, you know, 150-year-old Methodist church in the middle of the country, maybe 10% digital. Okay. So, and we cater to that church really well, that smaller church that we can get them spun up in a few minutes and get a giving button on their website, give them a website if they don't have one. And so, yeah, there's tons to get. And then globally too, there's, you know, we're in 8 different currencies today. We're going to spread it even more, get a bit more focused on the EU this year. So, you know, there's plenty to go do. But the early, so rewind, you know, 10 years ago, talk to a pastor, say, hey, like if they took a credit card donation, like it was very small amount, bank to bank transfer is never, the banking system in America is essentially the most behind in the world when you compare it to Asia and the EU. Bank to bank transfer in those countries is just so easy to set up. It's drama here. We make it easy now. So back then, it's just all cash and check. And you said, hey, I'm going to charge you 3%, right? So someone's going to give $100 and you're going to put it on a credit card and I'm going to take $3 of it because I got to process it and I got to do all this magic behind the scenes and I'm going to build software to make it look beautiful and easy. And but my thesis was that giving is going to go up because we solved two big things. Number one, recurring giving in a couple of clicks. So in the church business, right, world, you miss a Sunday, you've lost that revenue. Like, you know, I'm using business terms now. Because people don't give double the next week. And now people are in church 1 to 2 times a month. So back then, every pastor wanted everyone in the seat every week because you knew if they weren't in the seat, you weren't going to get the donation and that was going to affect your budget. So recurring giving simplified and then giving anywhere, anytime, right? That was those two things. I knew giving would go up. And so I'd half proven it, you know, but part of me, I just kind of was common sense. You just make things easy for people. And back then you remember like Amazon came with one click and, you know, that the internet worked out very early that friction like was a problem. And the more friction you could remove from it, especially a transaction, the more transactions would go up. And so, you know, I knew that if I could remove the friction from people giving to their church, that giving would go up. And of course it did. And we see churches 5, 10, 20. Man, if you do what we tell you, you can get a 25% bump, you know, in 6 months in your giving. So, but in the early days, right? And then we invented actually cover the fees. We were the first company to allow the donor, instead of giving 100, to give 103. So the church got the 400. We got our kind of fee to cover our costs and make money so we keep building more software. And so, you know, those couple of things really, and it was just, you know, I would just make the argument till I was blue in the face. I'm like, when's the last time you wrote a check at the supermarket? Well, probably never. When's the time when you went to the dry cleaner? What about when you filled your car up with gas? When did you write a check then? Never. So it was just, you know, I think the church in some ways can be 10 years behind, 15 years behind in the use of technology. That's why I'm always kind of championing, you know, to get out in front and start using the tools that I think are invented for us, you know, to help us be more effective missionally. And so I knew that, you know, digital giving would just catch up. But, you know, there's still billions and billions in cash and check in America. So we've got a long runway to go and keep growing the business.
Yeah, so, and that's really interesting that, for you to say that that churches are even that far, like even more further behind than maybe like we would have thought.
We still have churches every day that like we have this, they get a first email from me when they sign up. We ask them why they signed up. And, you know, the answers are probably 50% of the time. This is hundreds of times a month. We get new signups. Oh, we needed to set up digital giving. And what happens is if you're a smaller church, maybe rural, smaller town, it's usually because a younger couple has asked you where they can give digitally because they don't have a checkbook. They don't know what a routing number is. They've grown up in an era where none of that really is in their thinking, right? They all do online banking. They're all using all kinds of other banks now. And so, And that's, so they look for us, digital giving, church giving, online giving, boom, we rank 1, 2, or 3 every time. And they sign up and we get them going. And then that begins the slow march out of cash and check towards digital. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if digital giving, like if digital giving was this unlock that opened up, in my opinion, and probably like your main thesis, the ability for the church to be more effective. Yep. Because if they can raise more money, they can be more effective, right? Like there are those stats that you hear that if I forget, I'm not even going to say the stat, but it's like if X amount of churchgoers actually tithed, 100%. Poverty could be eradicated, right? Like if, yeah, it, but there was like some statistic. It was like if that number jumped to 20%, what could the church do for humanity or the church do for, you know, these massive problems that nobody can solve. So if digital giving, and even if we're in like the earliest stages of that, what the unlock has been able to be, okay, so now comes artificial intelligence, which that's even funny to say because it's not new, right? I mean, it's been around. I think ChatGPT launching was probably the first like in your face, hyper accessible.
Right.
This is now a thing that everyone can very easily start to use. So there has been like this massive argument in the church space between pastors and theologians and all of it. Should pastors use it? Should they not? What's the good? What's the bad? Just give me your like overall idea on how do you think Christians should be thinking about it? But even further than that, what do you think the key unlocks are? Like what's the thing in ministry that's never been able to have been done before? That now has an opportunity to be done.
I'm not sure it's going to discover things that have never been done. It's going to perfect, enhance, and make more productive the things that we do in ministry. But let's go back a bit. The name of this podcast, right? The New Printing Press. So go back to the printing press where the Bible could be printed and put in the hands, which essentially started the, you know, Protestant Reformation, that actually people could read the Bible and find out what it says. And that kind of unlocked, you know, the fastest growth of Christianity, you know, since the early church. You've literally got this state-run church for 1,000 years connected somehow to like monarchs and like, you know, kings and the church and bishops and largely the Catholic Church, right, in conjunction with whoever was ruling, you know, in Europe. And like, normal people didn't know what the Bible said. There was no Bibles to read. You weren't able to grow in your faith because faith comes by hearing and hearing from the word, right? So it's the Bible that actually grows you. And so the printing press unlocks that. We get 250 years of explosive Christian growth around the world. And you've got organizations, just all they do, you know, Tyndale and Wycliffe, all they do is want to print Bibles in every language in the world and they want to get them around the world because we know how important that is. Okay. So we've had 200 years of that. Internet comes along, online church, like some kind of hybrid. I'm going to put a video of my service online. I'm going to put it in a Facebook Live. I'm going to put it on YouTube. You know, there's churches with 500 people in the seats and 5,000 online. Mm-hmm. And so, like, you think about how different we have to think now. And church online, it's pretty proven, is that church online, people attending church online does not take away from people attending in person. It is actually a gateway for people to begin, you know, involvement with the church and then turn up in person. So again, it's like, oh, digital giving, I'm going to lose money. No, digital giving, increased giving. Oh, online church is going to take people out of the seats. No, it's the opposite. It's like this broadcasting free advertisement. And now I can put my iPhone on a tripod and go to live to YouTube and social media. Like anyone can do it. Now I don't need the pastor who's a bit tech savvy to set it up for me. I can do it myself.
Right. Well, it's almost exactly like, you know, you hear about the early days of professional sports when the owners were trying to, when these TV networks were trying to convince the owners to be okay with televising every single game. And most of the owners were like, no, this is going to keep people from wanting to come experience the in-person game. And the pitch was always, no, it's actually going to, in that case, grow the brand so large that the demand to be in person is only going to be larger. Yeah. Right. And it's almost like in some ways, exactly what you're talking about.
It's church, insane.
Right? It's like
if you enhance the fan base, right? So I go from, you know, trying to fill my 50,000 seat stadium, but I've got like 60,000 fans and I'm trying to get them all there. But now, you know, now I got 5 million, you know, I'm the Chiefs and I got 5 million fans. Well, it's easy to fill my 80,000 seat stadium every weekend because
don't need to think about it.
That's how church leaders need to think about online. And so here we go into AI, right? So I've been working on a deck because I'm pretty much wherever I speak these days to pastors, I'm talking about AI, and that's kind of what they want to hear, you know, about.
That's what I was going to ask. It seems like pastors are hungry to understand it and learn not just about it technologically, but how do I actually apply this and implement it, right?
I was at a pastors gathering, 1,000+, so these are bigger churches. Not, you know, a lot of over 50s there, a lot of over 55s. And I did probably a 20-minute thing. We did Q&A for another 45 minutes. We had to shut it down. Like it was, and anyone under 50 was all in. And we'll talk about like practical uses of AI in a sec. But even the guys that were older, the pennies were dropping because I made the argument. I said, how many of you resisted online giving 10 years ago? All hands. How many of you thought doing church services online was going to take people away from your service? All hands. And so I said, let's learn from that mindset mistake and think, okay, we're at the dawning of this new technology and it's going to revolutionize many things. So let's just talk some practicality. The obvious is communication, right? So AI, the way I can communicate and the speed of which I can create content to communicate is like 100x. Streamlining of administration. The tools that are going to be released in the next kind of, there's a bunch here now, I predict in the next 6 to 12 months. Like things like accounting, database management. We do database management for churches. We're building AI features in. Dude, I talked to my team yesterday. This is hot off the press. So we build websites and apps for churches. We just finished this tool and then we're testing it. I can take the URL of your church, of their website, paste it into this piece of AI, and I create a church app in 20 seconds.
Dang. Yeah.
Like,
it's insane. Okay.
Here we go. Mm-hmm. So things like communication, administration, database management, all this is going to enhance your ability, dashboards, predictability. So we're working on some things around predicting donor behavior based on past behavior. So we've got billions, millions and millions of donations, you know, the data. And we're kind of the goal is to say to you, church leader, the Smith family, who have been giving very consistently for 9 months, missed 3 gifts. And there's usually a reason. Pastors know there's reasons for people. Mm-hmm. Usually money is the first indicator of there's trouble in someone's home. Maybe they lost their job. Maybe there's marriage struggle, whatever. The money is the first indicator of people leaving the church. Mm-hmm. So what we want to be able to do, and we will be able to do this very soon, is basically score your church and tell you green, yellow, red. Mm-hmm. Hopefully there's tons of green. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, right, there's not a lot of red, but we want to show you the yellow based on giving, attendance, service, like volunteerism, small group attendance. Like those four things are like the Apple Watch kind of thing that tells you the health score of your members.
Yep.
We have all that data.
Well, and so, what's amazing is that it's highly pastoral because in the past, you sort of could count, you know, church attendance. You could count, did they check their kid into kids' church? Did they serve? Did they attend a small group? But first of all, putting all of that data together to make sense and tell some kind of a story is next to impossible. Just
very,
you know. Yep. And then nowadays, post COVID, church attendance fluctuates so much that that's almost a, like, unless it's wild and like a huge swing, it's almost like a semi worthless like statistic, other than if it's, again, like way up or way down consistently over a long period of time, right? Well, so
yeah, I agree.
I love that on the surface it's like, wow, that's a lot with data and it's very technical, but really if it helps a pastor be able to pastor, you know, I mean, I think about, you know, it's funny you say that. I mean, you would know this because we worked with you guys as a church to try and figure out pre-COVID and during COVID, okay, what's the state of our people? What is the data? How are we looking? And I mean, I would spend, as a location pastor overseeing, I mean, let's say at the time about 300 to 350 people at our location that my wife and I, our job was to look after them.
Right.
It would take us a week, a month just to make sense of who was there, what they were doing, how they were engaged. And then, I mean, I'm talking like 5 full days to just pull the data, figure it out. Right. And what you're saying is like, man, we're using AI to automate all of that.
Right.
So that someone who's getting paid to be a pastor could actually, who would have thought, pastor and not try and make sense of a bunch of stats in Excel. Right. That's brilliant. I love it. I love it.
So that's
such a great use case.
That's going to be a great use case. Like, let me go right on it, right out on the edge. We're testing this product for ourselves. We do 10,000 plus support tickets a month. Like, people asking us questions about software, and we use AI. AI has probably cut that down. We probably cut 3,000 responses out now that automatically get done with, you know, you just ask a question in the robot and we give you the answer. So that's going to keep getting better. But what's coming is like, we're one of the only companies that offer phone support. And we love it because we love to talk to our customers. It's very expensive. And the bigger we get, the harder it is. So what's coming, it's here, but it's not where I want it to be yet, is call up and you're like, we know your name automatically because we've got all your data. Hey, Mike, Dean here. How can I help you today? Oh, I'm having trouble with this batch giving and getting it synced to my bank account. Oh, let me help you with that. And literally that's a robot in my voice and it's 99.9%. Okay. Hey church, I need prayer. Oh, sure, Mike. What do you want to pray about today? Like, I don't know. That's pretty freaky.
Yeah. You got, there's some people listening right now that are spinning out of control right now. Yeah. Totally.
Why every survey you look at, like, the number one thing in the Western world is like, people are lonely. I could give you a bot all day to talk to you. You can talk to them all.
Controversial episode number 2, Christianity Today headline, Tidely CEO and founder says that robots should pray for people. So good.
Look, I'm like, you know, I'm taking you out on the edge. Here's another area.
Well, I was just going to say, it's going to happen. Whether you ultimately decide, we build this, somebody will build it.
Right.
You know?
Absolutely.
And I'm not saying that means we should, but what I'm saying is that it's coming, and it's coming very quickly.
Yes.
And I don't even think we realize the pastoral implications. Because here's the deal. You know, they could call your church to talk to a robot and have them pray, or they could go to some random website and develop a friendship with the random robot. Yeah. That they can get to pray.
Maybe my bot is trained on my theology, right? Maybe my AI pastoral guide has got, like, you know, let's say your Assemblies of God or your Southern Baptist. Like, I fed all of 100 years of lectures and doctrine and books into this language model. So it's all in sync with what you believe, right? Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, sermon prep, sermon research, all AI is going to, like, logos, dead man walking. Because AI is gonna just replace all of that. And because, like, even Jake's like, well, I you know, there's these kind of obscure guys that I read, and you know, you got to buy the license. I'm like, it's all going. I'm gonna get a hold of all of it by AI. And,
we've got a guy, we're talking with, right now, who runs an incredible consultancy for pastors, and they help pastors study and write and do all this kind of stuff. And he has a whole crew of probably 30 seminary students, you know, who are helping create all this stuff. Oh, and guess what they also have? They have digital copies of all of the resources that they use to research and study and the commentaries and all of the stuff. And he's like, dude, we got it on a Dropbox.
Exactly.
You know,
and then you slap the AI on it where you can search it and like, hey, give me, you know, the 5 key points for the doctrine of salvation, you know, with this commentator angle, like in the tradition of, and boom, just going to come flying. Mm-hmm.
Oh, and by the way, you could also make it so that after you preach the sermon, you upload the audio from it, and the audio can flag if you're stepping outside of certain theological lines.
Yep, exactly.
I mean, when you talk about where it could go, the Heresy Hunter YouTube channels will have nothing to after then. If
absolutely. But then I put it in Pulpit, right? And then I create assets for my small groups and all my social and all the things, right? That's the power of Pulpit AI. So, you know, that's all coming on us. You know, I know guys that preach on a Saturday night, it's filmed, and then it's live streamed to 50 locations on Sunday. Did you see, was it the Beatles? Someone, they did a hologram concert. Bob Marley. They did a hologram of him because he's dead. And it like looked like almost real. And of course the audio was him. So like I can see. So let me go right out there. Imagine if we could drop a hologram of Billy Graham in Mecca on the streets of Syria and start preaching the gospel. Like, dude, imagine we got Jake and we took that film, created the hologram of him and dropped him into Iran on the outside of the biggest mosque on a Friday night. And he's preaching the gospel. Mm-hmm. Hey, we're going to the ends of the earth, baby. Everyone's going to hear it. And so it's like, this is where my head goes. All of this stuff that's coming is just going to be able to get us more missional, further reach, faster reach, more powerful. And, really, you got to embrace it. And it will be, there'll be mistakes. There'll be people who use it nefariously. There'll be, it's like the internet. The internet's not the greatest place in the world. But I think we've learned, hopefully, the church, that we shouldn't be afraid of this stuff. And whilst the world and the devil can use this technology for evil, we should be right in the front lines using it for good.
Lastly, it's like, you know, whether you're listening to this and you're hearing what Dean and I are talking about and you're like a techno optimist maximalist, or you're like, what are these guys saying? They're out of their minds. This is dangerous. Here's the thing though, as a pastor, you cannot ignore this because it will be forming our people. I've shared this story before and I won't go into the long detail of it, but you know, I know someone who lost a spouse very tragically and is now living without that spouse and their 2 kids. And I know that this person has been exploring what would it look like for me to get all of the voice memos and videos and photos and writings of my spouse that I lost and create something that my kids could interact with.
Right.
And that's a question that has been pastorally been asked. And if you think that that's not like that is a small percentage of the kind of stuff that the people we lead and pastor are going to be wrestling and grappling with. The reality is that we have to develop a framework, and we can't put our head in the sand about it. Whether you are a maximalist or whether everything we are saying is triggering you and you are like going to go back and read the Desert Fathers and take a holy nap and Sabbath and whatever. The reality is it's here. And lastly, in these conversations with the pastors, 2 minutes, what are some of the practical questions they're asking? Like, what are some of the most practical things that you're seeing pastors either ask, wrestle with, or ways that they're immediately using AI, other than the obvious content repurposing that we already kind of know to be.
Look, I think my mission over the next couple of years, that where I can have some influence, is to get them to accept it first. So you have to get to this place where you're going to accept AI as a tool in your belt. And that's all it is. And that it's not, that's all it is. It's like money. It's just a tool for me to go do things. AI is just a tool. And then, you know, you basically prioritize becoming a student. You know, I read 3 AI newsletters a day. And I've been doing that for about 8 months. And I jumped on there was this one that came. I jumped on it yesterday, signed up for a free trial. I created a 8-deck slideshow for a kids' church about the parable of the prodigal son. Graphics, scripture, like the whole thing took 12 seconds. In a day, I could go and create a children's curriculum with all the graphic, all the assets of every parable in the New Testament in one day. And that's only because everything I can read about AI, you know, I'm absorbing. So pastors should embrace it, go learn about it, devote a day a week to studying it, read about all the stuff that's going on, and basically God will give you the revelation of how you're supposed to use it because it's unlimited. That's the power of this thing. It's like the early days of the internet. We didn't know the reach. We didn't know how powerful this was going to get. We didn't know there's going to be billions of mobile phones. And then I could communicate by video in seconds anywhere around the world. We just didn't get it. And now it's just normal. You know, I FaceTime my grandchildren. It's just like what you do. I don't know what it's going to do. I can think of 50 things, but we're at the AOL stage of AI.
Yep. I'll tell you, we don't know what it's going to do, but Sam Altman is about to raise $7 trillion to figure out what it's going to do. That is a war chest and a firepower that has probably never been seen or experimented with.
No one's ever come close to history. Raising that kind of money. pretty amazing. Cool. NVIDIA just went to $2 trillion. So there you go.
It is a new world, man. It is a new world. Well, awesome. Dean, thanks for being on the podcast. Thanks for being such a champion of what we're doing and just a champion, just honestly, across the body of Christ. I know that you can be found on Twitter, Instagram. You and I do a podcast called Kings and Priests. And if you're listening today, keep up with us, www.thenewprintingpress.com. That's the best way to keep up with all that we are doing, and we will see you next week.